The Arsenal Beat, the only podcast available that brings together the reporters and journalists who cover the club on a regular basis. Hi there and welcome to the show, our first official preview in the canon of the Arsenal Beat. Plenty for you today as we look forward to a tricky trip to West Ham on Sunday and open up the floor to our first ever parlay in the Arsenal debate. This week it's all about summer strikers. I'm Mark Manbrines from PA and it's an exciting one for me today as I've always wondered what it would be like to go for a drink with Rabsy Nesbitt and Colin Firth, and we've got fairly close to that today. As alongside me we have the Evening Standard Simon Collings and a debuting Jordan Campbell of The Athletic, where we'll also hear from our Arsenal outsider Jack Rosser of The Sun. Chaps, we're going to kick things off with the debate. The question was a simple one this week. Which striker should Arsenal target in the summer transfer window? I think the consensus is largely that Arsenal need to add another forward with Gabriel Jesus' fitness concerns. If you listen to us via Spotify, our Monday review pod carried a poll asking, in Jesus' absence, who would you prefer to see play up front? Almost 93% of people voted for Kai Havertz, which I think would have been very unexpected before that Liverpool game. A few votes in there for Leandro Trossard, but not a single vote for James Ollie's favourite, Eddie Nketiah. That says quite a lot, I think. Now, we'll all have, hopefully, a different name to throw into the mix. So all three of us will do a pitch for our respective striker and the reason why we think he suits Arsenal. Then we can decide who is right. In fact, we aren't allowed to move on to the next part of the show until we settle on one name to send over to Edu. None of us have gone for Ivan Toney, but I think it is worth flagging those Thomas Frank quotes today, where he said it was quite obvious that Ivan would be leaving in the summer. It's quite interesting, really, when you think that means that a move's going to come, but probably drag on for a lot of the summer unless someone gets the business done nice and early. But Toney aside, Jordan, given as you're the newbie, you can go first. So if you'd like to tell us who you've chosen and why, please.
Well, thanks for giving me the floor after introducing me as Rabsy Nesbitt. It's a very warm welcome. But yeah, I'll ignore that. But yeah, I think I said before, I think if Arsenal do have more headroom to spend in the summer, obviously that was one of the big constraints this season, largely because Arteta chose to obviously strengthen the spine in the summer to the extent he did, which made it quite difficult to really reinforce in January. But to me, if the opportunity arises and the funds are there, I think it's got to be Victor Osimhen. It's got to be the number one target. You know, we've seen this season teams readjusting to Arsenal now, obviously recognising how dominant they are, and they're getting deeper and deeper and deeper. I think Gabriel Jesus, we all know what he brings when he's fit, but he's not a penalty box presence, and neither is Eddie Nketiah, really. You know, he's obviously got a great youth record and he does well when he comes off the bench, but he's not, I don't think he's ever really going to progress to the level where he could be the number one striker. So I think you're looking for a different profile to the two of them. And I think you're looking for somebody who has a physical presence, who offers an aerial threat, which means you can add more variety in the final third. Because, I mean, Arteta talks about it just now. Coaches can only do so much. They can, their plans can get you into the final third, but when you get there, it's a bit more freehand and it is a bit more, you know, the autonomy is over the players. So I think if you've got the option of having a guy who's 6'2", 6'3", and we've seen him do it for Napoli for a couple of years now, you know, he's physically an absolute monster. So I think he could suit both. If teams are playing deep in the Champions League, if there's space to run in behind, like he can hold the ball up and be that sort of focal point where Jesus is obviously all likes to drift. I think he's the guy that you fix it around, and you then got maybe Saka can come inside a bit more, maybe Martinelli can come inside a bit more. So I think you've got a lot of variety if you have him as a third option.
Convincing as ever, Jordan. Simon, we'll come to you next if you want to give a counter argument and chuck your name into the ring.
Yeah, I mean, I do like Victor Osimhen, and when I was deciding who to pick for, he was someone who definitely on my mind. Same with Ivan Toney. I think similar sort of profile in terms of a different profile of striker to what they got. My concern with Osimhen was just probably the pricing. I think it's he has always going to sign a contract that's going to put his release clause at sort of north of 100 million. And for me, my pick was Alexander Isak of Newcastle, who is a player that Arsenal have looked at before. He can operate out wide through the middle. I think he's proven himself in the Premier League. And Newcastle went on record. I'm not sure which member of the executive team or directorial team said it was, but basically hinted that they need to sell a big name to sort of comply with the Premier League's profit sustainability rules, which I know a lot of clubs, including Arsenal, are sort of getting to grips with. There's been talk about Bruno Guimarães going to PSG, but I think if I was Arsenal, I'd be looking at Isak as someone trying to tempt Newcastle and say, look, if you need to raise some money, we'll take him off your hands. I think he's a brilliant player. I think his movement's great. I think his ability to drive with the ball is something that Arsenal probably don't have in that sort of profile of rangy forward. And I think he could fit in anywhere across the front three. And given that Arsenal have already scouted him and probably know a lot about him, I think a lot of the groundwork's been done. So, yeah, he'd be my pick.
We obviously didn't see his car parked at the Emirates Stadium a few transfer windows ago, so didn't we? So maybe we'll finally make the trip. I've gone a bit left field, maybe, but I've gone for Dominic Solanke. You two there, the two you mentioned, obviously quality players. I think you wouldn't have to pay an extortionate amount of money, I don't think, to get Solanke out of Bournemouth. He's an experience in the Premier League. You know, he's proven he can score goals, even at a club who aren't exactly among the big boys. I think doing a bit of research, he's averaged a goal every 2.8 games in the Premier League since Bournemouth were promoted. But this season, he's got 13 in 22, with only Salah and Haaland have got more than that, which actually, if you think about it from that perspective, it's quite stunning, really, when you look at some of the other strikers in the league that haven't really done as well as him. And at a club that have struggled, especially at the start of the season. You know, he works hard in that Iraola system. He's busier on a Saturday than Greg Wallace. You know, he's 26 years old, so a 3 or 4 year deal as well, I think, would suit him nicely. He's on the fringes of the England setup. So, yeah, and I also think one of the benefits of a player like that is I don't think he would necessarily be expecting to start every week, or even if he came in and he wasn't starting every week, I don't think he's going to be the kind of player who kicks off about it. It is that, I suppose, the question mark is can he play in those other positions, as Simon mentioned then, that an Isak could do. But yeah, that's my pitch. So I think we should all probably agree on Dominic Solanke, shouldn't we, boys? Jordan, anything there that swayed you away from Osimhen, or are we both talking rubbish?
Yeah, just talking rubbish as usual. But yeah, I was listening. I like both shouts, to be honest. You know, Isak coming in off the left, sort of vintage Henry when he really gets going into fifth gear. Such a handful. I do like that, I guess, with both of them. You know, Solanke's probably at the three is the easiest or the most realistic that you could get out for a reasonable price. My only concern with him is that, you know, Solanke, everybody knew for a young age that he had the potential to be a great striker. Is he willing to now make a step where he's not going to be guaranteed to play? You know, that was the big thing for years when he went to Liverpool, was the thing holding him back. So I guess that's my only concern with that. I think Isak as well, you know, of Newcastle trying to become one of the super clubs. I don't know if they're going to be tempted into, I take what Simon's saying about having to raise funds, but, you know, that would be one of probably the crown jewels. So yeah, no, I have been, I can be persuaded because I know someone's the priciest of the three, but that's just my Glasgow eating habits. With the pricey menus, but I could be persuaded, but I guess are we living in fantasy world here, or are we dealing with, have we got Edu's wallet on us? Do we know how much we've got here to spend?
I think unlike our January special, we're trying to be as realistic as possible. Simon, do you think, and it's something I've made a note of during Jordan's pitch for Osimhen, and actually it could be a load of nonsense, but does this idea of having to have Premier League experience mean anything? We saw, obviously, when's the last player? Haaland just walked into the league and destroyed it. He'd never played in it before. So do we put too much of a price on that, do you think?
I mean, that's a good shout. We should have said Haaland. There we go. That would have been, that's the pick. No, I think, I mean, it's certainly, judging by the last few years, it means something to Arsenal. I think if you look at their track record of signings, there's been a pretty noticeable shift towards Premier League proven players, and it's worked really well for them, I think, by and large. So I think certainly from the club side, they're putting a greater value on it. And I mean, no signing is a guarantee, but I think you can take out a degree of the uncertainty by going with a sort of Premier League proven player. And maybe that's why when we've put all our three names forward here, we just all agree that they should go and get Ivan Toney. Because I think in terms of those deals that we speak about, you know, I think the Osherman, if there is a clause in one sense, it makes it easy to do. But if it's, you know, 100 and I think it's 112 million, it's going to be like just an awful lot of money for a player. The same regard Solanke, my reservations with him would be, you know, is he really going to move the needle enough when you're trying to close that gap on Manchester City? I mean, maybe he could develop into that player, but it's sort of a question mark. And with Toney, I think when he's got 1 year on his deal, I mean, you spoke about Thomas Frank's comments today, but it reminds me a bit of when he spoke about David Raya sort of a year ago, and he sort of was just dropping out there like, oh, you know, well, he's probably the best keeper in the league. He's probably worth 40 million, as if to like say, come on, let's get bidding. And I think with Toney, you know, everyone's well aware that he's got a year in his contract. He's not going to sign a new one. And it feels like that's a deal that is there to be done for a player in his prime, point to prove. Maybe we just ignore all three of our suggestions and go with Ivan Toney. But
that might be the one that's easiest to agree on, might it?
I know. And if I was going to quote Mikel from his presser last week, not that quote, but we're not living in Disneyland, and maybe sort of 100 million Victor Osimhen isn't realistic. Unless Arsenal decide that they look at the spending and they think, right, forget everything else. He's the guy. Let's go and get it done. But maybe if you're trying to divide your money a bit and you can get a Toney and a sort of wide player, works a bit more. But
I was going to say that. Like, would you not be, I guess it depends on how the last few months of the league go, but would you not be of the mind that it's the time to put all the eggs in one basket? You know, it is the time to really go big on that position. You know, I was looking at, you know, Arteta's spending since he came in. He spent around 400 million on goalkeepers, defenders, and defensive midfielders, and under 200 million on attacking midfielders and forwards. So clearly, when he's been building his team, it's always been a sort of foundation first, and it's got him to this point. But compared to other clubs, it is the one area that Arsenal haven't really gone big on. Obviously, Jesus and Havertz were big investments, but you look at the lack of depth there. I come back to Isak, maybe he is a good shout, because you think Martinelli, what will Martinelli's position be in 2 or 3 years? Could he be that number nine? Because, you know, I think he's probably got the game and he's got the finishing ability to maybe evolve into a number nine. With Isak, you've probably got the interchangeability. And then I suppose you've got two strikers, well, or two arguable, you know, reliable finishers in the front three. So I do like that shout. Again, my reservation with Solanke is that I think he's doing really well, but is he above a Jesus? You know, I think he's a different profile. And I think that's what I think all three of your picks are. We've ticked that box, that it is a different profile, but Isak's probably, you know, and price wise, probably going to be more than Toney. So yeah, maybe I'm coming around to Toney as well.
I think if you argue in terms of pricing, you know, obviously striker is a key area, but I think we'll probably agree you need a midfielder. And you look at someone like Zubimendi, I think is what well reported the club like, whose release clause is like 50 million euros. If you think you can maybe get Toney and Zubimendi for the price of Osimhen, do you spend your money like that? I think that could be an argument. But if you get to the end of the season, and I agree with Jordan, it might be that the club go, forget everything else, this is the missing piece of the puzzle, let's go and put all the money there. I just wonder whether sort of doing a deal for Toney that might be a bit more feasible price-wise could be the answer. But then they've shown they can spend money. They spent 105 million on Declan Rice because he was his sort of franchise player. So I don't think it's a straightforward one to pick.
So we've all agreed to go for someone that none of us put forward. But something else maybe we could all agree on is the summer probably, possibly the end of Eddie Nketiah, Jordan? Should it be?
Well, I mean, we ask this every summer, don't we? But, you know, I think if Arsenal can bring in a decent fee for him, then I think it's probably something they should do. And probably for his career as well, it's probably the right time to make the step. You know, whenever we speak to him, you know, we can always vouch that he's very genuine and that he really likes his role, but he's never settled to be a number two. Yeah, he is pushing, he is fighting to get his minutes. But I think when Havertz came in like against Liverpool and performed like he did, I think you're now thinking whenever Jesus is probably out, the default choice for most fans would probably be Havertz. So you're looking at Nketiah thinking, I don't think he's progressed this season. I think last season you saw a lot of development in him. He's all round game, but I don't think this season he's gone up another level. So I think if Arsenal can start to bring in money from the likes of Nketiah, if say Fabio Vieira or if Smith Rowe doesn't get any more minutes towards the end of the season, if they can bring in money for those guys, obviously academy players as well goes down as pure profit. So that could potentially boost the coffers for the summer. But yeah, I think it probably is a natural end. Unless he is happy being, you know, a third choice behind another new striker, but he doesn't strike me as the sort of guy who will want to be at Arsenal at 25, 26, 27, having, you know, most of his minutes coming off the bench and in cup games. He strikes me as a guy who wants to be out there scoring goals and being the main man at some point, a bit like Dom Solanke. So, yeah, I think it probably is time.
Simon, I think something fans of Nketiah would always have argued that he's not had a chance before, but with Jesus' injuries this season and a bit of last season as well, it felt like he has had that chance. But by that one little spell last year, he hasn't exactly filled the void, has he, really?
No, he's had those sort of runs, isn't he? And that run last year after the World Cup where he played felt like the moment where, you know, he sort of put his hand up more than he has before. And I think a bit of an issue with him actually is like when he comes off the bench, I don't actually think he's that sort of super sub that someone like Trossard actually is. Like his actually best sort of performances have come when he's got a sort of few run of starts and he's not really getting that. And I agree with the sort of the way the team is going now where Havertz looks like your second number nine. But I think it was James Ollie who was talking to us when we were at one of the games saying, well, isn't your third choice Leandro Trossard? So, you know, he's almost the fourth choice striker in some people's eyes, and justifiably so. So when you're in that position, I think for the club, you know, for financial reasons, it makes sense to sell him. But also for Nketiah as well, I think Jordan has hit the nail on the head in terms of him being ambitious. You know, this is a guy who could have quite easily, if he wanted to, gone and played for Ghana. But he, you know, wanted to play for England, determined to make the England squad, has done that. So he's clearly someone who's not going to settle for just sitting on the bench. And I think if Arsenal go out and, you know, bring in a new striker, that's going to speak more than whatever words Arteta says in the press conference. That'll be a clear message to Nketiah that, look, this is the person I want to lead the team forward. And I think he'll do a decent job for someone sort of mid-table, higher mid-table in the Prem. I think he'll score goals. I just don't think he's going to be the number nine for Arsenal. There's, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I just think he's not quite at that level. But he's done a decent job. And as we've seen, you know, Arteta's used him a lot. I think he's like the third most used player. So he's someone that Arteta likes, but I think it's kind of run his course. And for probably all parties, maybe the moment's there to move on.
West Ham are next up on Sunday. The Hammers have knocked Arsenal out of the Carabao Cup earlier in the season and picked up a rare win at the Emirates Stadium over the festive period. On our dedicated preview shows, we are now going to be quite keen to bring you the inside scoop from the opposition, from a reporter who often covers a club. So we spoke to The Sun's Jack Rosser about all things Irons. So, yeah, Jack, just obvious place to start, but how well is West Ham season progressing, would you say?
I think you can only say it's positive. They're obviously through to the last 16 in Europe, having finished top of the group for the third season in a row. And they're in the contention for the European places again in the Premier League. Man United beating them at the weekend was obviously disappointing, but they had their chances and that meant United just went above them. But there's been some grumbles from some about the football, but their squad's improving steadily, but still fairly limited in terms of some things. And David Moyes is absolutely getting the best out of them at times.
Obviously, they beat Arsenal in the Cup, but they also won at the Emirates in December. Is that the highlight of the season so far, do you think, going to the Emirates and finally getting a win?
Yeah, I think it would have been, especially for David Moyes. There's always a lot said about his record against the sort of the big six and struggling, especially away from home against them. But they are normally quite good value for a result like that, West Ham. They obviously beat Man United just before Christmas at the London Stadium, which was part of a real sort of turnaround. It had sort of hit. You know, there's pressure on Moyes again, and then they go and pull those results out against Manchester United and Arsenal, and then have since slipped off a bit with a few injuries. But I think Arsenal, you know, that sort of spell of the wins over United and Arsenal is certainly the highlight so far.
You mentioned David Moyes there. I think for a lot of people that maybe don't watch West Ham often or don't really understand maybe the history of the fandom at that club, why is there such a disconnect, you think, between Moyes and the West Ham supporters?
It's a difficult one because I think if you're in the stadium, you know, the atmosphere, it depends. The atmosphere can be fantastic in that stadium or it can be painful at times. But I think match-going fans don't have too much of a problem with him and are quite pragmatic. But obviously nowadays you've got the whole outside of that and fans on social media and speculation on fan websites and things like that, sort of having a go at his pragmatic football. I think they had him the first time around and they kept him up, and then the decision was to go with a bigger, sexier name, if you like, and they got Manuel Pellegrini, which went wrong. So when he was coming back, it sort of felt a bit like a regression for the club, and I think some fans have maybe never really, really taken to him. But I think, you know, the progress that he's made, the evidence is there that it's hardly a regression. It's a huge progression as to where West Ham have been. He's very sort of, you know, he'd love to play attractive football all the time, but he can look at a squad and know what it can do and what it can't do. And especially when you've not got players like Lucas Paqueta, they've not had Mohamed Kudus when he was been away at AFCON, injuries to Mikel Antonio, you know, they still can't get a reliable striker. I think when you've got issues like that within a squad, you can't go out and try and play completely free-flowing football. But he has shown at times, he said with Paqueta, when he's playing and he's fit, that, you know, it sort of goes against what he believes in and what he wants to do, but he's happy to let Paqueta sort of go anywhere and do what he does because he can be so good. So I think they are slowly progressing into trying to play a nicer style of football.
You mentioned the host of players there. Who on Sunday will likely catch the eye of West Ham to get another result against Arsenal?
Yeah, it'll have to be the front two. It'll be Bowen and Kudus. I mean, Bowen has had to come in through the middle and he's not a natural striker. A couple of people have said he doesn't really enjoy playing the role too much, but he's still scoring, which is fantastic, especially when he's not the sort of player that, like Antonio, can disrupt or occupy big central defenders like Arsenal have got. And then obviously Mohamed Kudus as well. I think you'll know better than me, but he was linked with Arsenal over the last couple of years. And having sort of been dripped in by Moyes into the team before around sort of October, November, he really sort of hit his stride and was in fantastic form before going away with AFCON. Just came back for the last couple of games and maybe will take a little bit of time to get going again. But when he's on his day, he's a fantastic player.
Guys, Jack has addressed this game from a West Ham perspective. But in terms of Arsenal, Jordan, they lost twice to West Ham this season. Any concerns over those results, do you think, heading into a third game this Sunday?
Well, I mean, I think the one at the Emirates was just such a freak game where Arsenal completely dominated it. Actually, we've spoken about earlier in the season, Arsenal did have creativity problems. This was not one of those games. You know, Arsenal were penetrating West Ham. I think they had a ridiculous number of touches in the box, and it was just either that final pass or overthinking things. And I think during that period, whether they run a 1-7, 1-1-7, that was, you know, I think it was a case of players losing confidence and maybe overthinking things and taking an extra second too long. So I don't look at that game and see lots of things to be concerned about, but obviously there is the psychological issue of last season where they were cruising Arsenal, absolutely flying after 20-30 minutes. It looked like they were going to breeze through the game, and then out of nowhere the game completely flipped. Now obviously Declan Rice is on the other side, but it's not been a great first couple of visits back for him. But no, I think Arsenal should be confident. It feels like they've got their mojo back in the last few weeks. And the one thing I was going to say was when we look at Arteta's teams and how Arsenal developed this season compared to last season, I don't think we're going to the Olympic Stadium really thinking it's going to be a high drama game and thinking it's going to be end-to-end and that Arsenal might be too emotional. I think that Arsenal have found a sort of equilibrium, and it's been based this season on defensive solidity. I think when you look at Arteta's team now, if they go on to win the league, how will this team be remembered? And I think the first thing you'll actually think about this season, the most synonymous thing with the big games, is how solid they've been and how they've managed to completely shut out teams. So it's quite interesting when he's gone back to obviously play David Moyes, a guy who was his coach for 6 years when he first came into English football. And I think people underestimate how much he rubbed off on him in terms of not saying his style of play is the exact same, but how much organisation and hands-on he is on the training ground when it comes to out of possession. I think people sometimes just draw this parallel with Pep, and that there's so much overlap in terms of how they play on the ball. We forget that a big part of this Arsenal team's success is how well drilled they are off the ball and how difficult they make it for teams to play through them. So, no, I've seen a big development in that side of the game this year. Obviously, Saliba's back and Rice is there as well. So I don't think you go there being worried about the spine of the team. And I think West Ham have probably, I know they're doing better in the league, but I don't think they're as well organised as they were last year.
Simon, we've been going 20-odd minutes now and Declan Rice has only really been mentioned dispatches. It's a shame, really, that Carabao Cup game happened and that he came on and he had that return, because this would have been quite a hot atmosphere for him. It still might be, but in as long as you can, in as short as you can, just sum up to us, in your words, how big has he been for Arsenal since he signed in the summer?
Oh, massive. You know, I think he's arguably player of the season. I'd probably put William Saliba alongside him as the two standout candidates. And yeah, he's been back there before, but I kind of feel like this is another sort of homecoming of sorts. You know, he came off the bench in that other game when Arsenal was sort of 2-0 down and chasing the game. Had a pretty mixed reaction from West Ham fans. Certainly seemed to enjoy the result. He got a fair bit of stick when they lost at the Emirates as well. So I think as much as anyone, you know, he'll want to have a point to prove on Sunday and go back there and put in a statement performance. And for me, the biggest thing with Rice has been him absolutely delivering in the biggest games. You know, I think of the Manchester City game, the Man United game, even Chelsea away when Arsenal were awful. You know, he turned up, scored, turned the game to get it to 2-2 against Liverpool. He was brilliant. And that has been what has signified his season, turning up when Arsenal need him. And now we're going into sort of the run-in. This is really when you expect Rice to go up another gear. And I think this weekend, he will really want to prove a point, particularly after going back there and Arsenal getting beat 3-1, pretty miserable performance. And yeah, I think we'll see a very different Arsenal to the one that were poor there in the Carabao Cup.
I was just going to say on Rice, like, I think the biggest thing, you know, we know he's a great player and what he offers on the ball, off the ball, but when Arsenal have a dip in a game, I keep thinking back to that Anfield game before Christmas, when it looked like maybe they'd lost momentum, the guy who grabbed the game by the scruff of the neck again and got them moving the ball and took control of it again was Rice. Like Palace away, the 1-0 early in the season, Arsenal were really struggling to get another rhythm. And all there's one moment in, I think, the 20-odd minute, he just took the ball, played about 3-1-2s and started really zipping the ball about. And I think they've got that guy now who does take the reins. You know, Odegaard's obviously leads in a different way, but I think Rice is the guy that people actually look to now for inspiration. And yeah, I don't think he's ever going to let Arsenal have a 20-30 minute spell where they go flat. I just think he's really good at keeping that sort of base intensity throughout the 90 minutes. So yeah, I don't think he'll be too bothered by the emotions of it, or if he gets a bit of stick either.
I think he'd enjoy it. He's the kind of guy I think I'd enjoy a bit of stick. That game in the Carabao was, you know, he got booed warming up and he got a few chants before the game. But actually, at the end of the game, West Ham won. So I suppose they could change their perspective of that. And, you know, it was all very appreciative of him and things like that. But it will be an interesting one to see. He will certainly start this time round, won't he? We know what Arteta's like with injury news. He keeps his cards close to his chest. Simon, if Jesus is fit, probably a big if, does he play? Or does Havertz keep his place regardless? As we said, the vote we had on the Spotify poll said that fans would want Havertz there, but it's a tough one given how well Havertz played against Liverpool, isn't it?
It is a tough one. And I would be tempted to let Havertz keep his place. I think he did well enough in that role to justify getting it. And again, I think this West Ham team, you know, will be sort of two physical centre-halves again. And I think having Havertz up there doing a lot of that dirty work, which probably was the best thing he did on Sunday, obviously missed that big chance, but the work he did off the ball and linking the play was really important. And I think for his confidence, I think it would do him a world of good to keep his place and back him, given the faith. And for Jesus, you know, having him as an impact for sort of 30 minutes off the bench would be absolutely huge. And I'd probably want to name the same team. I think the only change I would make, And obviously on injury news, you know, Zinchenko is another one who's a doubt, would be to have Tomiyasu go straight back in. That game in the Carabao Cup, I think everyone will remember that Kudus goal over the top of Zinchenko, which has been an area where teams have targeted. And I think going to West Ham and playing probably against Kudus or Bowen on that right, I think I'd want to have Tomiyasu playing left back for that sort of game. So I would stick with that Liverpool team and maybe just make that one change at left back to try and nullify what I think is West Ham's biggest weapon.
Jordan, I don't know if you're a gambling man or not. I get the impression you are. But if I gave you a fiver, what would you stick it on Sunday, predictions-wise?
I'm going to go for a 2-0 Arsenal win. Again, I think, just basing on the fact that they're so solid right now, the only way they look like they're going to concede a lot of the time is for a self-inflicted goal like at the weekend. You know, I think Arsenal are their own biggest enemy at times. So I think that's the only way I can see them really crumbling now to the end of the season. But yeah, just on team selection, I would be more happy to put my money on Simon's lineup. I agree completely with that, because I think, and as much as it's because I think Arteta would get value from backing Havertz, and he looked a lot more natural playing up that higher up role. I think Jorginho's influence from now to the end of the season, we've seen him in October when he played virtually every game and became so influential. I think the way he played at the weekend, that mix of maybe having Rice a bit slightly higher up and being in the thick of it and winning those 50-50s as well, I think that would be big. But yeah, I'm going to go 2-0.
Any progress on that, Simon? Are you happy with 2-0?
I'm happy with 2-0. And I do agree, yeah, the sort of the hallmark of Arsenal only really conceding when they give teams a chance. And yeah, I think 2-0 and a clean sheet be the order of the day.
Seems like a perfect place for us to wrap that up. Thank you for joining me, guys. Thanks for Jack from the Sun as well for dipping in. We'll be back on Monday to review the West Ham game. Don't forget to give us a follow on social media at the Arsenal Beat. But until then, stay safe, everyone.